Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, a lot going on between Israel and Iran since Thursday, and that successful, according to Benjamin Netanyahu, very successful opening strike. And so Israel has striked Iran, dubbed Operation Rising Lion. And Netanyahu goes on to say, with God's help, we are going to achieve many great achievements. So what got us to this point, and what is the forecast? Because things continue to rapidly change. So let's welcome in Scott Uhlinger, who's a former CIA officer. And Scott, let's break down all things Iran and Israel.
Well, a lot has certainly happened in the last few days, earth-shattering events, actually. This attack on Iran to prevent them completing their nuclear weapons development is going to go down in history as one of the most successful military operations in history. Right now, Israel has absolute air control over almost all of Iran. And keep in mind that Iran is like more than 1,300 kilometers from Israel. So we're talking about Israeli jets spending hours in the air just to get to the target. But right now, there are more Israeli aircraft over Iran than there are over Israel itself, because Iran has basically shown itself to be kind of a paper tiger. Their ability to defend themselves is limited. And in fact, it has been destroyed in the past two or three days. So now what Israel is looking at doing is trying to eliminate Iran's ability to strike at Israel. And that is in the form of ballistic missiles, which, leave the atmosphere and then come down back into the atmosphere to hit their targets. These are the kind of missiles that have nuclear warheads on them, the American versions, the Russian, the Soviet versions, and the Chinese versions. And this is what Netanyahu wanted to prevent. Now, these missiles that Iran is launching are, of course, non-nuclear, but they are destructive. But so far, everything is looking good as far as Iran's degradation, its inability to hurt its neighbors. But also say that the attack, the Trump had an interesting role in this, is that Trump kind of employed a little bit of deception, because he was initially saying that he wanted to continue to talk to Iran, but I guess it's clear that, let's say, by about Friday, it was clear after five negotiations, sit down meetings with the Iranians, that they were not sincere in basically their willingness to denuclearize, which Trump had said is the deal. If you won't denuclearize, then the whole deal is off. So it was apparent there was supposed to be a sixth meeting on Sunday. He gave the appearances that he was holding Israel back while he was waiting to sit down on Sunday to talk for a sixth round of nuclear talks with Iran. But let's say by Thursday, Friday, he realized that Iran was just stringing him along, was just delaying, using the talks as an excuse to continue their weapons development, which, by the way, is a trend that they have used over the years. And I predicted on television news many times in the last several weeks that these talks would be unsuccessful, because the Iranian regime would never concede and give up their weapons. So it was a nice gesture to try talks, but it was in the end, useless. And so Trump gave the impression he was holding Israel back while they were getting ready to do a sixth round. But in the but he was actually cooperating with Netanyahu, saying, okay, I'll send out these messages that I'm holding you back. But meanwhile, you can actually go forward because I realize now that they're just pulling the wool over my eyes. So that's the situation we have right now.
Wow. And this is a really obviously intense situation. This is something that that the U.S. had previewed a little bit. And there's kind of a division, Scott Uhlinger, over the United States involvement and where the Trump administration should be. What's your view on the best play for the United States coming in the midst of Trump's basically rejecting any form of criticism, including from, you know, Tucker Carlson, who's been a fan and ally historically, generally, and basically pushing back, according to some reports, against criticism from Tucker, just saying, you know, being dismissive and just saying we can't let Israel get nuclear weapons, and so we're going to basically do everything that we can. And of course, I'm paraphrasing, but do you agree with that line of analysis from the Trump administration?
I think the Trump administration is doing a really good job now, because what they're doing is they are standing aside while Israel does all the work. So in other words, he's not pouring any gasoline on the fire by going with, like, basically joining in the attacks, and at the same time is not stopping Israel. In other words, he's just stepping aside and letting Israel do the job, and they're doing an incredibly effective job. And I think that this was the right approach to take. Certainly there were some people, like Tucker Carlson, was absolutely wrong, and I would have told it to his face weeks ago, because it was clear that, like, that Iran, that an involvement with a war with Iran would start World War III. That is not true. It was never true. And anyone who understands the Middle East would know that that was not true, including myself. These regimes in the Middle East are mostly about show. There is a reason why Israel destroyed three air forces in 1967, because it's all show. Whether it's the Egyptians, the Jordanians in the old days, or the Syrians, or the Iraqis in the 67 and 73 wars, you know, they put up a big appearance, but in the end, they fold because they don't have the military capability. They just have nice parades and nice shows of shiny weapons that they don't know how to maintain, that they don't know how to employ properly. And we saw this several months ago when Iran and Israel traded blows, because Israel knocked out some Soviet or some Russian advanced missile systems that people said, oh, they're going to shoot down the Israeli Air Force. Well, they went in there, again, 1,300-kilometer trip one way to drop your bombs, and they effectively knocked out those anti-air missile sites. And from that point on, it was very clear that, okay, Iran does not really have the ability to retaliate. Now, see, ballistic missiles are a little bit different, because it's basically like a robot. I mean, you push a button, you don't need... I mean, you have to maintain the missile, but then you push a button and then the missile does it itself. It's not like an air force. You know, right now, Iran's air force has ceased to exist. 300 aircraft have ceased to exist. The missiles are the main threat. But what we're seeing is the Israelis are basically striking and eliminating Iranian leadership. They're not carpet bombing, killing Iranians. They're clearly using this as an opportunity for regime change. Reza Pahlavi, who lives in America and is the heir to the throne of Iran, is encouraging his people to rise up. And the Israelis are wiping out the leadership to allow the Iranian people to take over. And the Iranian people have despised the regime for many, many years. When I was in the CIA, I was working with Iranians who hated their regime. And this hate has only increased in the last 10 years. It hasn't decreased. So the Iranian regime is greatly endangered right now. And so that's kind of the goal now. It's not just denuclearization of Iran. It's sort of regime change. And so we're going to see what's going to happen with that. Iran has, the only thing it has left in its bag are these ballistic missiles. And so it's lobbing them at Israel. And it's, when I say lobbing, I really mean lobbing. They're hitting kindergartens, they're hitting schools, they're hitting apartment buildings, because they're not really accurate weapons, because Iran lacks the command and control to coordinate the strikes. And so, like, it's a totally different philosophy. In other words, they're just aiming to terrorize the Israeli people, whereas the Israelis are looking at removing leadership of Iran, and they're doing it. They've killed the head of the Air Force, the Army, the Navy, all of their headquarters, the Iranian, or the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, the IRGC, which is effectively the Waffen SS of the mullahs. The leadership of all of these has been, it's gone. It's like basically they took out the equivalent of the Pentagon in Iran. So who's in charge? Probably like a colonel. And things are getting pretty ragged in Iran.
And I'm speaking with Scott Uhlinger, who's a former CIA officer. And I want to switch gears here in the last 5 minutes or so I have with you, Scott, and covering this other story that broke late yesterday, a cyber attack on Washington Post strikes journalists' email accounts. This coming as there are concerns with everything going on with Iran and Israel for some cybersecurity risks. And so this was a cyber attack on the Washington Post, and this coming from the Wall Street Journal, comprised email accounts of several journalists and was potentially the work of a foreign government company, officials told some affected staffers in recent days. According to people familiar with the situation, staffers were told the intrusion compromised journalists' Microsoft accounts and could have granted the intruder access to work emails they sent and received, some of the people said. The reports targeted include those who are on the national security and economic policy teams, including some who write about China. So what's going on here? And is this in any way, do you think, associated with anything going on in Iran? Or is this just a continuation of cybersecurity threats that the United States is routinely concerned about?
Well, I think it's kind of routine cyber threats. However, Iran has been effective at cyber warfare previously, but I do not think that Iran is involved in this at all. They have a lot of other problems. Okay, but China is the main culprit of cyber attacks on the U.S. The Chinese CI threat is unlike anything the United States has ever faced in its history. Okay, how many people in Congress are bought by China? How many, like, China employs influence operations, cyber intrusions through their students? Because of a law in 2017, every Chinese student must cooperate with Chinese intelligence. So some people who are in AI development in the United States say that the breadth of Chinese espionage against AI is unbelievable. So this I would throw clearly in China's lap. Maybe they're taking advantage. They want people to think that it's Iran, but it's China behind all of these things. They continue to treat us as an enemy, as a main economic rival and as an enemy, the same way that Iran has treated us as an enemy since the revolution in 1979.
Wow. And, you know, this is something that is just going to continue, I think. And for this type of data and this type of breach, is there any concern that anything perhaps confidential that these reporters were working on is now at risk? I mean, probably this is a little better if we're talking about a data security breach in the sense of, the Washington Post, more so than if this was a government agency, for example. But what's kind of the risk level here?
Well, yeah, I don't think the risk level of this is particularly high, but the risk level of all the other things is incredibly high. I mean, just last week, within 2 days, they found three Chinese were smuggling in basically bioweapons. They were smuggling in things which were designed to damage U.S. crops on a large level. So, I mean, think about this. They and of course, what about the Wuhan lab and stuff? What about that bio development? Was that an accident? I think highly unlikely, right? We know it was developed in the lab in Wuhan. We know that everyone denied it for a long time, but the CIA finally, under pressure, admitted it. And so that combined with, like I said, the recent importation of biological weapons shows us that this, despite a smiling face, Xi wants to destroy the U.S. economy. And so The Trump administration had better, you know, basically look at China as a potential enemy. They are really to be watched very closely, much in the same way that Iran is a threat. But of course, China is a much more pervasive threat. And so it's just something that we have to look at very seriously. And it's something I've been concerned about for many years.
All right. Well, we need to take a break here. But Scott Uhlinger, looks like there are some concerns on a lot of different fronts. And this is why it's so important to get a good analysis from people like you, former CIA officer. And we will continue to talk about Israel and the No Kings protests with our good friend Joel Rosenberg on the other side of the break. So we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We've got the No Kings riots set to kick off this weekend. No Kings. We like kings, actually, folks. We like one king in particular, quite frankly. The King of Kings, our Lord and Savior. I don't know. Maybe you've heard of him.
That was President Trump with a great response to the No Kings protests that, according to Newsweek and, of course, many other outlets, the protests that see major crowds and violence in some states. And, you know, the original No Kings protests, but we usually celebrate it July 4th, is in Article 1, Section 9.8 that says no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States and no person holding any office under profit or trust under them shall, without consent of the Congress, accept any present emolument, office or title of any kind, whatever, from any king, prince, or foreign state. And this was a spoof kind of meme on social media, but I thought it was hilarious that was not actually a truth post from Donald Trump, but it was kind of impersonating him saying, "A huge thank you to all the No Kings protesters yesterday. I was very concerned a king was trying to take my place, but thanks to your tireless efforts, I am still your president. Great job, all." So all of this coming, of course, as we're still very concerned about what is going on in Israel and the and all of the breaking news that you can find at allisraelnews.com from our good friend Joel Rosenberg, Operation Rising Lion live update. So the latest live update is the IDF shoots down Iranian drones throughout the country. IDF withdraws troops from Gaza, strengthens border security, and the U.S. consulate in Tel Aviv suffers damage from an Iranian missile. So let's welcome in Joel Rosenberg, our Israel foreign correspondent, who is actually in Jerusalem this morning, I'm told. So Joel, our prayers are with you and everyone in Israel. And what is the latest update?
Well, Jen, it's great to be with you. I am at the TBN studios where I produce a program for All Israel News and TBN called The Rosenberg Report. I'm looking out right now at the Dome of the Rock and the old city of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount and the Mount of Olives. I never cease to be amazed that I get to live here and work here and serve the Lord here. Right now, the skies over Israel are quiet, but it has been a very painful, hellish several days. We are winning. Israel is destroying the Iranian nuclear and ballistic missile terror complex. Day after day, wave after wave, hour after hour, Israel has now established air superiority over the entire country of Iran, and it is just sending wave after wave to pound all these positions of missiles and nuclear weapons technology. But we have taken real hits here. 24 Israelis have died in Iranian ballistic missile attacks. I think the number is around 400 are wounded so far, and there have been some direct hits. Israel is shooting down about 85 to 90% of the missiles, but you know, these systems are not foolproof, and so some of these missiles have had direct hits on apartment complexes and office buildings in Tel Aviv and other places in Israel. So at the moment, the skies are quiet, but at least here in Israel. In Iran, they are not quiet, and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Iranians are evacuating out of Tehran because Israel has said, we are going to hit key Iranian military and intelligence facilities there. And so they're encouraging Iranians to flee. And the video coming out of Tehran, the capital of Iran, is really quite breathtaking, the number of cars in traffic jams trying to get out. And I think that's an important message that the Iranian government, the wicked regime in Iran, has put the people of Iran in jeopardy. But I would make this one other point, Jenna, and that is Israel is not targeting civilians, but the Iranian regime is targeting civilians, and they are killing Israeli civilians, and they even hit, as you just mentioned, the American consulate. This is that's an act of war right there. But Israel is being very careful only to target military and strategic sites and not civilian population centers.
Wow, and I'm speaking with Joel Rosenberg, who's the editor-in-chief of All Israel News. You can find all of these headlines at allisraelnews.com. And the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said Thursday amid the initial action, tonight Israel took unilateral action against Iran. We are not involved in the strikes against Iran, and our top priority is protecting American forces in the region, he said in that statement Thursday evening. Israel advised us that they believe this action was necessary for its self-defense. President Trump and the administration have taken all necessary steps to protect our forces and remain in close contact with our regional partners. Let me be clear, Iran should not target U.S. interests or personnel. So so I'll ask you the same question, Joel Rosenberg, that I asked my previous guest, Scott Uhlinger. As far as the United States is concerned and where the Trump administration is positioning with supporting Israel, I mean, even Speaker of the House Mike Johnson said Israel is right and has a right to defend itself. Where do you see, as an American and also also a Jew, where do you see the administration's touch point on this whole situation and how it is standing up for Israel?
Yeah, so full disclosure, I'm actually both a U.S. Citizen and an Israeli citizen, and I have had two sons who have served in the Israeli army in the past, and I have my youngest serving in the Israeli army right now. So I just want to put my cards on the table. Look, I think President Trump has done an astonishingly wonderful job standing with Israel. Trump decided he did not want the United States to be the one taking the lead at attacking Iran and destroying Iran's nuclear weapons infrastructure and ballistic missile infrastructure and terror infrastructure. That's his call. He's the commander in chief. Israel, of course, would have loved, would have preferred, let's put it, point out that would have preferred the United States under Obama or under Biden or under Trump, that the United States take the lead, because this is not just an Israel problem. It's an international problem, right? When the radicals in Iran go to their prayers every day and they shout, they don't shout death to Israel first. It first is death to America and then death to Israel, right? So ultimately, the Iranian regime wants to annihilate the United States. But that being said, Israel has never asked the United States to send your sons and daughters into harm's way to protect Israel. We ask for the tools to do the job, and we ask for political support. But after that, we're willing to do it. It's just that Biden and Obama refused to give us permission to protect ourselves, and we didn't feel like we could cross them at that time. But Trump has given us support. Now, Trump started the year by saying, I want to make a deal with Iran. Let's give them time. And so he made an ultimatum. He told the Iranians, you have 60 days. You can make a peaceful deal that's comprehensive, robust, verifiable. But if we make the deal, U.S. will lift the economic sanctions on you and everyone can avoid war. And those negotiations began on April 12th. Now, 60 days later was June 11th. And on June 12th, when the Ayatollah, the supreme leader of Iran, the Ayatollah Khamenei, rejected all of Trump's offers, publicly rejected, on June 12th, the 61st day, it seems clear now that Trump gave Netanyahu the green light. We gave Iran 60 days. We made a good faith effort. They don't want to make a deal. So you have a green light to do what you've got to do. And Netanyahu went to his cabinet, got the vote, and on the early morning hours, the wee morning hours, 3 a.m. Israel time, Friday the 13th, the 62nd day after the ultimatum, the negotiations began, Israel attacked. So, and Trump has been very supportive of us, praising what we're doing, standing with us, even though people in the Trump orbit, like Tucker Carlson, have blasted, trashed Trump as though he's abandoning America first. Well, Israel is one of America's most faithful allies, and we are taking care of a problem that is America's problem and all of America's allies' problem in this region, but we are doing it, and we are winning. And I'm telling you, Jenna, when the smoke clears from this fight, Israel is going to be the dominant superpower, the sole superpower in the Middle East, because we have taken the fight that no one else would take. No other world leader had the courage to destroy Iran's offensive genocidal capability. And I give a lot of credit to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who not only in the end will have defeated Iran's regime militarily, but also Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis as well. That's a pretty good track record for a very difficult 20 months.
Yeah. And so, and speaking of that, how does the whole view of Iran from Israel's perspective link into the ongoing conflict with Gaza? I mean, is this something where the ongoing war has revealed coordination between Iran and proxy groups, including Hezbollah and the Houthis, or at what extent is Israel intelligent viewing Hamas and Gaza in this overall conflict?
Yeah, the leaders of Hezbollah and Hamas have been very open over the years that they get their weapons and much of their funding, sometimes all of their funding, from the Iranian regime. And certainly in this war, Israeli military forces have captured documents inside Gaza showing, proving without any question, the very close coordination between the Iranian regime and Hamas regarding the invasion on October 7th, 2023. So, but we're basically down to, we're in the end days with Hamas. Israel is continuing to pound Hamas, continuing to pick apart Hamas street by street, neighborhood by neighborhood. We're still working to get our hostages out. But as the Hamas leadership, we've killed most of their top leaders, but the leaders of Hamas that exist still in Gaza, when they see that the Iranian regime, their military and their nuclear system has been completely destroyed, there's not going to be a lot of incentive for Hamas to keep fighting. I can't give you a day. I'm not going to be foolish enough to make a prediction of when Hamas will either lose or surrender. But that day is coming closer and closer every day because Hamas is just realizing that its benefactor is being picked apart in a way that nobody thought that Netanyahu would ever do it. And most enemies of Israel didn't think that Israel even could do it, even if Netanyahu had the temerity to order such an attack on Iran. And everybody thought, well, even if Israel can destroy Iran's Iran's military threat, and even if Bibi would do it, no American president would let the leader of Israel do it. Obama didn't let Bibi do it. Biden didn't let him do it. And even earlier this year, Trump was not letting him do it, right? But now Trump has. Now Bibi's doing it, and nobody saw it coming, even though Netanyahu's been talking about this as long as I've known him, which is 25 years. He was preparing for this moment.
And I'm speaking with Joel Rosenberg, who is the editor-in-chief of All Israel News, and you can find that at allisraelnews.com. And so so we've talked about the aggressors, but what about the allies or this, you know, in the sense of the Abraham Accords? Is the Abraham Accords bloc holding firm, or is Iran's aggression straining those ties? Because we know that that's very important to the Trump administration as well.
Yeah, it's a great question, Jenna, and I'm happy to announce that, yes, as we reported on allisraelnews.com, the Abraham Accords network has totally held. And in fact, while the countries that have made peace with Israel in the region, the Arab countries, are not, you know, they're not cheering Israel out publicly because they have to be very sensitive. They're going to wait until Israel wins. But I can tell you privately, inside the palaces of every country, Arab country in the region, except Qatar and probably except Iraq, everybody else is cheering in their palaces because Israel is doing what no one else would do. And all of these Arab countries have feared Iran building nuclear weapons. The country that's cheering most is Saudi Arabia. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. I talked to him personally. I'm one of the few Americans that have ever met him. And I'm telling, and I talked to him on the record. No reporter has had this opportunity. And he told me directly that he regards the supreme leader of Iran as the new Hitler. And so he, I haven't talked to him in the recent days, but I'm convinced without any question in my mind that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia and all the other leaders of the region are thrilled by what Israel is doing. It's messy, it's painful, it's not easy, and it's going to take some time. And there will be hard days before we finish the job. But we're doing the job that no one else would do, even though everybody else in the region knew it had to be done. But no one has the capacity or the wherewithal to do it. And so that's why Israel is going to emerge, Jenna, when the shooting stops and the smoke clears. You mark my words, in the next few months, it's going to be clear to everybody in the world that Israel is the superpower in the Middle East. And I mean no disrespect to the United States, but the United States didn't do this. It would be much easier for Americans to do it because Americans have bunker buster bombs, 30,000-pound bombs, that could be dropped on these sites and finish them off in a few days. Israel has to keep sending wave after wave after wave after wave to keep firing smaller missiles and bombs because we don't have bunker buster bombs. But it's okay. Like I said, we're not asking America to do our job. Would we prefer that? Sure. Anyone would prefer that a superpower take on and destroy Iran's nuclear menace. But okay, they didn't. But they're giving up. The president of the United States is giving Israel full support against some of his own political friends and allies. And we could not be more grateful. And we're going to get this job done. And then, and the other thing is, who are the two dogs that are not barking? Where's Putin? Where are the Russians? Where are the Chinese? Where's Xi Jinping? Like, they're the allies of the Iranian regime. And they haven't lifted a finger to send weapons. To send troops to tell Israel, don't do this or you're going to war with us. Thank God. But I'm just saying nobody's coming to Iran's defense. And that's a very beautiful thing.
Well, Joel Rosenberg, we'll have to leave it there for today. You're always so generous with your time, and we appreciate you stopping by as our Middle East correspondent. And again, praying for your safety and for everyone else in Jerusalem. In fact, I just got a text from a very dear friend saying that his parents were vacationing in Israel and are trying to get out now through the Florida rescue team. So just be praying for all the efforts across the globe. I know that this is a really big deal, but especially for that Florida rescue team. I know the governor is doing everything that he can as well. So we'll just continue to pray for all of this. And again, you can follow all of the headlines at allisraelnews.com and Joel Rosenberg at Joel C. Rosenberg on X. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence and often alone. Preborn Network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now are lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother as well. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, a political assassination leaves Minnesotans reeling. Quote, is this really who we have become? So this coming from Fox News 9, a calculated and cold-blooded set of assassination attacks have left Minnesotans stunned. Democrat leader Melissa Hortman and her husband were killed. An additional attack from the same assailant, State Senator John Hoffman and his wife were also shot and left fighting for their lives on Sunday night. So from Yvette Hoffman's wife, quote, Senator Hoffman was shot 9 times and is, quote, enduring many surgeries right now and is closer every hour to being out of the woods. She said she was shot 8 times and that they are both incredibly lucky to be alive. So this comes amidst some other ongoing political controversies, including a vote on illegal immigration. And so here is Cabot Phillips, who's a reporter for The Daily Wire, on Melissa Hortman, the Minnesota lawmaker, crossing party lines.
The timing of this crime may also be a clue. Just days before she was assassinated, Melissa Hortman had been the only Democrat to cross party lines and support a Republican budget measure that would cut off taxpayer-funded health care for illegal immigrants in the state. That move drew outrage from Democrats across Minnesota. Here she is just hours after that vote.
I did what leaders do. I stepped up and I got the job done for the people of Minnesota. I think some of them are pretty angry. I think that their job was to make folks who voted for that bill feel like crap.
Let's welcome in John Cardillo, who is a GOP strategist for more. And John, you know, this seems like amidst this, the No Kings protests, which of course became violent from the left, the CEO killing, of course, the two attempted Trump assassinations, so much else. I mean, the targeting of Governor Shapiro's home in Pennsylvania, I mean, and a number of other things. I mean, the left is increasingly the party of violence.
Look, we're in the age of political violence, right? And we've seen this time and again, but for some reason in my gut, this one reminds me of Harvey Milk back in 1978, the gay activist, when he was shot and killed alongside the mayor of San Francisco. And everybody thought it was because he was, an activist for gay rights at a time when that was a new thing. And it turned out it was just an old political beef with a guy named Dan White, another former councilman who had anger management issues, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with the politically charged issues. It was just an old grudge. Because, look, this guy was a political appointee. His wife ran for office. His wife was a registered Democrat. Everybody is saying this guy was a right-winger. He was a right-winger because of one old video of him spewing some Christian nationalist tropes. But there's nothing to support that that was actually his position. In fact, more evidence now is showing that this guy was starting a church almost in an L. Ron Hubbard fashion, just for adoration, attention, and money. So there's not even any indication that he was truly a religious person or a Christian, any of that. I don't know. In my gut, I just feel like we're going to find out there was some old political grudges or beefs or rivalries between this guy, maybe his wife, and the two he shot. Because if he's the right winger, it doesn't make sense to shoot the only Dem across party lines
to defund health care for illegals. I mean, she's doing your bidding at that point. So from a motive perspective, I'd be looking at the history of the relationships among all the parties.
And that's a really good point. And I think, you know, we'll continue to find out more, especially because a report broke early this morning that now this suspected assassin was arrested near his home. Yeah. And he had kind of a manifesto that was talking about the No Kings protests. And so it's probably a lot more complicated than just saying, well, you know, here's who he voted for. Here was his party support. You know, obviously, when we look back even at the shooting years ago that Steve Scalise was involved in and the congressional right. baseball game, you know, everybody wanted to rush and say, well, you know, this was a Bernie Sanders supporter, but, you know, ultimately that doesn't paint the full picture. And so with this whole list, I mean, he had, I think it was over 70 or so individuals and politicians, including even Governor Tim Walz and the Lieutenant Governor of Minnesota on his list. So, you know, so from a, because you're former NYPD. So, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, you know, obviously they're looking at potential charges, all of these things, but what more would you want to know in terms of, what was behind this and what was motivating this and hopefully how, you know, these kinds of, political acts of violence, really need to be eliminated altogether in the United States. I mean, these are things that it just seems like we're continuing to ramp this up in just the first quarter of Trump's first second rather administration.
Well, I mean, look, that one we can blame squarely on Democrats, right? I mean, they constantly call for violence. There are great video montages out there on X of all the times Democrats, Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters and all of these lunatics on the left, AOC and Jasmine Crockett and Cori Bush and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, all these times they've called for violence, for political violence. I mean violence, riots in the streets. Then you get down to state-level politicians. But to your point and your question, I think what the investigation, the first place it'll go, right, is obviously examining the manifesto. Now, it's always suspect when they don't release it, because typically if it had right-wing rantings, we would have probably seen that thing in 35 seconds. And so it leads me to believe it was a little more moderate. I'm not saying it was necessarily left, but it might not have painted the picture of the right-wing Christian nationalist the media needed. And let's face it, Minnesota is a very leftist state. I don't know if your listeners understand this. When we talk about Ilhan Omar, everybody goes, well, it was the Somali immigrants who elected her. No, it wasn't. Ilhan Omar won her first race by about 280,000 votes. There was only a voter universe of 30,000 Somalis at the time. 250,000 white liberals voted Ilhan Omar into office. So Minnesota is a very leftist place to begin with. But when you have a list that long, you have to start looking deeply at this guy's political history, his wife's, if they had any problems, if they lost jobs, money, contracts, whatever it may be, and then start examining deeply at the granular level every relationship between him and not just the people he killed and injured, but everybody else on that list. And then you start to put together a picture as to why. Now, look, Janet, it could just be as simple as he's a guy who snapped. And to be the black pill, the ultimate pessimist, those are the ones you're never going to stop because they're low tech, they're asymmetrical, they don't take planning, they don't take chatter, they don't take organization where you can insert a confidential informant. If somebody wakes up one day and just says, I hate these 15 politicians, and makes a list and loads a weapon, there's really nothing law enforcement. This isn't a minority report, you know, where you have psychics in a tank and we can tell it's going to happen. There's very little law enforcement can do to be proactive and interdict those lone wolf attacks. So those we'll continue to see. I mean, we've seen them throughout history. But again, unless the person's been ranting and raving, nearly impossible to get in front of those.
Yeah, and that's what's really scary here. And, you know, this is unlike the No Kings protest, which we had, you know, a lot of a head start on, at least, you know, the 48 to 72 hours. But when we're talking about the broader scope, John Cardillo, about left-wing violence and how, you know, these aren't mostly peaceful protests. These aren't just, these peaceful watching burning of cars, as one ridiculous leftist commentator put it. Where are things like this? Because it was clearly very well-funded. It was clearly, something that was very well-coordinated. And so this is only, I think, inspiring a lot more political violence across the country. And so when we talk about the context of the First Amendment and the right to actually peacefully protest, this is very different than what we saw across the country on Saturday.
Well, yeah. So I think, evidence is emerging that Soros' Open Societies Foundation helped paid for that. There's now some pretty compelling paper and paper trails that the Chinese Communist Party contributed. Big labor unions typically contribute to these things. I remember about 15 years ago when Black Lives Matter first came on the scene and they were doing those violent riots in New York. You know, what do we want? Dead cops now. SEIU, the labor union, was proudly posting to their website that they were funding that. And so, I think with regards to the No Kings protest, though, those luckily fell flat. But it's certainly your legacy left-wing groups who are footing the bill for this, but more importantly, doing the organization, right? I mean, that's a big part of it. So it's not just about money. It's about grassroots organizers to get the people to these. And the last point I'll make is your point about the left downplaying. Some lunatic leftist, I forget they were media or politics, said, well, L.A. County is this big. The riots were contained in this area. And he drew a little circle on a large map of California and L.A. County. But I dissected it. I said, okay, you're saying it's 1 square mile. I said, well, that's 630 acres and about 300 square city blocks. That's a pretty big riot to downplay, all right? That's a pretty big riot because here in Florida, we saw protesters on the sidewalk, standing behind barricades, not stepping into the street, maybe for 2 or 3 blocks, maybe 4 or 5 in some cases. But California, think about that for a second. Those riots were 630 acres, 300 square city blocks. That is massive organization, no matter how much they try to downplay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's fascinating to me, and I commented on my ex account this weekend along the same lines, John Cardillo, that it's actually frustrating to me to see how easy it is for the left with all of their financing, their coordination, their very lockstep strategy, that they can basically overnight organize these kinds of massive protests in so many major cities. And here we are, 60 years later and can barely organize, one massive pro-life march and rally once a year. Yeah. I mean, this is really frustrating. Not that we should look similar in terms of the violence, clearly, but in terms of just mobilizing individuals to care about a cause and to genuinely be activists for conservative causes. What does that tell you?
Well, no, Jenna, I'm so glad you brought that up, right? So let's take riots and protests out of the equation. The Democrats have always understood that you win everything. You win the White House, you take control of Congress, you control the narrative, and you essentially control the mindset of D.C. As we watch rhinos in the GOP fund Democrat programs, if you start at the most basic grassroots level, and what I mean is Republicans love to throw black tie fundraisers, here in South Florida at Mar-a-Lago or the Breakers and these great venues. And look, I go to these parties and they're fun, but they don't do anything to move the needle. Democrats run for school board. They run for supervisor of elections. They run for county tax assessor. They run the prosecutor's offices. They run the public defender's offices. They embed themselves at the foundation of local, state, and then as they come out of the farm team and into the pros, into the federal government with all that institutional knowledge. And we've always looked at it from 30,000 feet. And, you're never going to just be able, World War II proved to us, you've still got to have ground troops, even if you have air superiority, right? And we see that everywhere in the world in every conflict. They do it really well, and we do it very poorly. And if we don't get better at that, they're going to continue to outpace us at the local level. And eventually, it's going to be the point of no return.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And we need to continue to talk about the strategy from the right and how we can counterplay all this, especially when we're less funded and overall it just takes a lot more work. So John Cardillo, really appreciate your thoughts overall on all of this. You can follow him on X at John Cardillo, and you can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.